let's learn a little bit. We'll talk about current events a little bit later. Yeah, it's very sad what's going on.
Yeah.
So we're on Daf Vav Omer Aleph in the Sechta Sota.
Yeah.
And the Mishnah is presenting four scenarios in which the Sota, after Kina and Stira, does not drink from Meimararim. She doesn't drink from the bitter waters in each of these four scenarios for a different reason. And as a result, she's not allowed to resume her relationship with her husband. And therefore, she cannot eat truma. So in other words, even though a woman who's married to a Kohen would normally be allowed to eat truma, but in this case where she's not allowed to have this relationship with her husband, as we pointed out in the past, the ishus is incomplete. It's not a full-fledged marriage relationship. So therefore, despite the fact that her husband is a Kohen, she does not eat truma. She cannot eat truma. So what are these four cases where she cannot drink from the bitter waters? Case number one, Ha'omeres Tmea Anilacha, where she admits that she had this adulterous relationship. Again, we don't believe her per se, but once she's accepted upon herself this Isur, which we call Shavya Nafshi Chaticha Isur, we don't have time to go over that again, but she now accepts upon herself by her own confession that she had this relationship with another man, she can no longer resume her relationship with her husband, and therefore she cannot eat truma. So if a woman confesses to the crime, then she would not drink from the Mei Mararim, and she would become a full-fledged Sota by virtue of her own admission, and she can no longer resume her relationship with her husband. And even though there's not enough evidence to support her claim that she committed adultery, but nevertheless there is some evidence. We have Kidui and Stira. So therefore, we suspect that maybe, you know, she did have this relationship as she claims, and then by virtue of her confession, she can no longer resume her relationship with her husband, and therefore she can no longer eat truma. The second case, go ahead, please.
So, can she then just marry anybody again?
She'll need a get from her husband.
Once she gets a get, I mean, is she allowed? But
once she gets a get, I would not recommend marrying this woman.
She must be tainted, because everyone must
correct.
Know that she's
exactly.
Facility, yeah.
She, her reputation is not a great reputation, but technically anyone is allowed to marry
her. And presumably this will move on. The reason why she's admitting guilt, not drinking the water, is because there's a consequence she may die. Is that right, by drinking the...
Well, again, that's more of a psychological explanation, but on a pure legal level, in terms of the conceptual framework, what happens is that since she, by her own admission, cannot resume her relationship with her husband, therefore she can't eat truma.
Yeah.
Because the only time a woman who's married to a Kohen is allowed to eat truma is when she has an ishus relationship, which means that she's allowed to live intimately with her husband.
Fine, okay.
Yeah. Now, our Mishnah, it seems to indicate that maybe she is believed to say that that she had this relationship, but I don't think the Mishnah means necessarily that we fully believe her, but rather we have enough to go on, so to speak, that we generate an Iser of Truma.
Right.
Then we get to case number two. And that's the case of Shebo Edim Shehi Tmea. That we have two witnesses who testify that she had this relationship. So for sure, in this case, she can never resume her relationship with her husband, and therefore she's not allowed to eat truma. Then we have the third case, Homeres Eini Shosa, if she says, I'm not going to drink from the Meimer Rorin. And this is based on a Gemara later on, which we haven't gotten to, that on Daf Chaf, if we have a woman who refuses to drink from the Beimarorim, we cannot force her to drink from the Beimarorim. She has to be willing to drink from the Beimarorim. Now, if she's not drinking from the Beimarorim, once again, she has broken up the Ishus relation with her husband, because since we have Kini and Stira, she can no longer resume her relation with her husband, and therefore she remains as a Sota who's not allowed to eat Truma if she's married to a Kohen. Then we have the flip side of this case, which is called Shembaila Einarotzalash Kosa, that the husband does not want her to drink. And this is a Gemara later on, which also appears in other places in Shas, that says, based on the Pasuk Vehevi Ha'ishas Ishto El HaKohen, that a man brings his wife to the Kohen, meaning for the purpose of drinking, and it means that he consents, he agrees to have her drink from the Mei Merorim. Here we're talking about a case where he refuses, he doesn't want to give her that option of drinking from the Mei Merorim, and therefore the whole precondition for Mei Merorim is non-fulfilled, and therefore she's a Sota, she cannot drink to clarify whether she's guilty or innocent, and therefore she is forbidden from eating Truma by virtue of the fact that she cannot resume her relationship with her husband. Then we have a case where the husband is not such a pretty, shall I say, tzaddik. And that's the case, Shabbaila Bala Baderech. Right, the Torah says that after Kini and Stira, he's not allowed to have any relations with her, and on the way to the Beis HaMikdash, he couldn't overcome his temptation, that he had a relationship with his own wife, but he's not allowed to. And in such a case, we cannot have her drink from the Mei Merorim, because the Torah in Mei Merorim Parshanos says, V'nika ha'ish me'avon, that he, the man, is free of sin. And the Gemara tells us that, this is a Gemara here in Sotah Chav Zayin, that only if he's free of sin, then will the Mei Merorim be effective. But if he is guilty of sin, then the Mei Merorim will not be effective. And once they're not effective, we go back to her status as a Sota, and she cannot prove her innocence, and therefore she's Asura Albaila, she's not allowed to have any relationship with her husband, and the Ishus is incomplete, and therefore, even though he's a Kohen, she cannot eat Truma. So that's as far as the Mishnah is concerned. So in truth, how many cases are there in the Mishnah? I said there were four, but I think there are five. Yeah. Homer's Tmeani, number two, Edim, Bo Edim, She Tmea, number three, Homer's Edishosa, number four, Baila, Eina Rotzalash Kosa, number five, Baila, Bo Leha Badera. So we have five cases in which it would be absolutely meaningless to have her drink from the Mei Merorim. The Mei Merorim would not be effective. Hence, she remains a Sota after Kini and Stira. She's not allowed to resume relations with her husband, and therefore she's not allowed to eat Truma. The Gemara says, Hamilsa, this is Omar of Amram, Hamilsa, Omar Lon Rav Sheshes. There's something that I heard from Rav Sheshes. The Aner Lon Einin Bimasnisen. The anher is miloshen or means light. He enlightened us. The anher, it's an active verb. From einin means our eyes. So he enlightened our eyes, mimasnisen from Mishnah. Meaning, here's what's going to go on. Rav Sheshes is going to make a pretty revolutionary statement, a halakhic principle. He's going to prove it from our Mishnah. And in doing so, he sheds a whole new light on our Mishnah. There's something here in the Mishnah that's sort of in a cryptic form, meaning it's not explicit, and we would not have paid any attention to it if not for Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes is going to tell us that if you read the Mishnah carefully, we're going to prove a certain halacha from the Mishnah, and that's going to shed a new light on the Mishnah. Now, it's very interesting that the Gemara in Brachos establishes that Rav Sheshes actually was a saginor. He was not, he could not see. So when the Gemara sort of, he was blind. So the Gemara beefs him up by saying that he shined a new light on our eyes. He illuminated us. That's, in a sense, a compliment to Rav Sheshes, despite the fact that he was a blind person. So let's get, without further ado, let's get into Rav Sheshes' statement. Sota sheyeshla eidim b'medinas hayam. What that means is that we're here in Yerushalayim. We don't know of any witnesses that could testify. Certainly if there were witnesses, that would clarify without the Meimurarim whether she was guilty as accused of adultery. But right now, we don't have any witnesses. So we, as far as our knowledge is concerned, there are no witnesses to this case. We're going to find that much later on, that indeed there are witnesses to the case who actually saw her committing this adultery. But these witnesses are out in Medinas Hayam, in a far off place. And we don't know that they exist, because we're here, not there. We will find out at some later point that they're there, but right now, in the ignorance, right, the absence of any knowledge that there are witnesses here. Because again, if there are witnesses and we know about these witnesses, then immediately we're required to invoke these witnesses, to subpoena them to court and have them testify. But we don't know of the existence of these witnesses. We're going to only find out much later on down the line. So in the meantime, we're in a state of ignorance. The Beis Din, the court in Jerusalem, is totally oblivious to the existence of two witnesses. They haven't shown up because they're out there in a far-off country. And Rav Sheshes says that we are going to, based on our ignorance, meaning we don't know that there are witnesses, we're going to ask her and implement the drinking of the Meimurarim. But later on, we're going to find out, hey, lo and behold, to our surprise, there really are witnesses. Is Eina Mayim Bodkim Osa. In such a case, the waters will not examine her. In other words, they're ineffective. They cannot determine for us whether she's innocent or she's guilty. And Rav Sheshes is going to derive this from a verse in the Torah, in the parasha of Sota, which means in Parashas Noso. And based on his understanding of the Torah, he's going to come to this conclusion that we now have a situation in which the waters will not be effective. And the reason they're not effective is because in truth there are witnesses who saw her commit this crime. We're going to give her a drink, and we're going to sue. Well, look, you know what? She didn't die from these bitter waters. It must be that she's innocent, but really in truth she's guilty. So you'll ask me, what do you mean she's guilty? So why didn't the waters kill her? The answer is because the waters themselves are ineffective. They don't have the power to determine one way or the other whether she's guilty or innocent. And the reason for that is because there were witnesses who saw the adultery. We didn't know about that at the time, so we gave her to drink. But now the witnesses show up in Beis Din, and this is all what the Gemara is going to develop now in the next few lines. And when they show up in Beis Din, we finally found out, and it becomes clear to us that we really shouldn't have given her the waters to drink. But not only that, we find out even more than that, that she drank the waters, but those waters cannot test her, so to speak, cannot examine her as to whether or not she's guilty or innocent. Now, why shouldn't these waters be effective? I mean, after all, we didn't know that there were any witnesses, so we did everything according to procedure, according to protocol. It wasn't as if the judges did something to jump the gun. They should have waited another 6 months to see if maybe witnesses will show up from China. that they weren't negligent about. So everything was done kedasu kedin according to the protocol of the Torah. She drank for the Meimorari, and she still survived it. Let's assume that the reason she survived it is because she's innocent. No. You're making a big mistake, says Rav Sheshes. The reason she survived it is irrelevant, because the whole procedure of her drinking is totally irrelevant. It has no significance whatsoever. Why? Because there are witnesses on the case. If there are witnesses on the adultery, then the waters have no power to test her and determine whether she was guilty or not. How does Rav Sheshes know such a revolutionary statement? The Omer Kra, because the Pasuk says in the parasha of Sota, the Nistra of Nitma V'Ein Einba. Now, earlier in the parasha, the Torah says we take this woman to the Beis HaMikdash and she drinks for the Mei Merari. But in a later pasuk, in the same section of the Torah qualifies. Why is it that those waters will determine whether she's guilty or innocent? Because the Ein Einba, which means there are no witnesses who saw her defile herself, saw her have this adultery relationship. Deleka diyada ba. The Torah says the Ein Einba means that no one knew about her situation, meaning whether or not she had this relationship. Lafuke, to the exclusion of ha, of this case that we're talking about, daha ika diyadava, because there is in fact two witnesses who know that she violated and this crime and she had this adulterous relationship. So in other words, what the Torah is telling us, says Rav Sheshes, is that the reason why the bitter waters are meaningful and they can in fact examine her is because there are no witnesses. And the drinking of the water is now like a substitute for witnesses. If in fact there are witnesses, right now we don't know about them, as the Gemara is going to clarify, but nevertheless there are witnesses who can testify to the fact that she had this relationship. In such a case, the entire Mei Merarim enterprise is completely ineffective. Now the truth is that this Gemara is a little bit difficult, to say the least, because that pasuk v'ha, that pasuk that says v'ein einba, that she has no witnesses, is coming to teach us something entirely different. If you remember back at the beginning of the Masechta on Daf Beis, both on Daf Beis of an Aleph, Beis of an Beis, the Gemara derives from this very pasuk that in a case where one witness comes forward to testify that she had this relationship, then we do not administer the Mei Merarim. Why? Because the Torah stipulates that Ein Einba, she doesn't even have one single witness. So we're not talking about a case where she had two witnesses, rather the Torah is talking about a case where there was only one witness. And if one witness testifies that she had this relationship, then we're going to trust that witness and she will not drink for the Mei Merarim. Now if we accept that drasha of the Sugya Daf Beis, and the Gemara doesn't mention anyone who rejects that drasha, then the Ein Ba is not coming to address a case where there are two witnesses who saw her defiled, but rather there's only one witness, and that's enough to undermine the procedure of drinking from the Mei Merarim. So the question is, how do we reconcile Rav Sheshes here with the drasha and the expounding of this verse, this very, very same verse at the beginning of Masechta Bava Basra, Masechta Sota, sorry. And I think the answer is that there are two ways of reading V'ein Einba. One is called Pshuto Shel Mikra, means the straightforward understanding of the pasuk, and the other way is Alpi Drasha, meaning we can apply the rules by which we sort of delve below the surface and derive by implication certain halachic principles that are implicit in the pasuk. The Gemara back on Daf Beis is talking about the drush of the pasuk, meaning what can we expound from the pasuk. Here, Rav Sheshes is talking about the pshuto shel mikra, the simple plain meaning of the pasuk. The plain meaning of the pasuk is that the waters are ineffective if there are witnesses. And if, right? So, yeah. when are the waters effective? That's because there weren't witnesses who could testify about the defilement, about the adultery. If there were witnesses who could testify, we'll find out later that there are in fact witnesses, then the entire procedure of having a drink for the Mimrum is ineffective. That's the Pshuto Shel Mikra. That's the simple, shall we say, straightforward understanding or plain meaning of the pasuk. The Gemara, on another level, below or deeper below, you know, the surface, meaning digging down below Pshuto Shel Mikra, the plain meaning, is going to imply that we derive from this pasuk that there are no witnesses whatsoever, not even one witness, and therefore she drinks from the Mei Merari. But if we have one witness in Beis Din who's now testifying that he saw the adultery, then she will not drink from the Mei Merari, because we're going to rely on that one witness. Rav Sheshes is derived from the plain meaning of the pasuk that in a case where we don't have any Eidim, so to the best of my knowledge there were no witnesses whatsoever, but as it turns out later we're going to find out, to our surprise, that there were two witnesses who witnessed her defilement, then even though she's already had the Mei Merarim and she drank from the Mei Merarim, that doesn't prove anything, because the Mei Merarim are ineffective because Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that there are two witnesses. We don't know, but Klal Pishmaya up in heaven, they know that there are witnesses, and therefore the metaphysical supernatural power of these waters is completely stripped, completely taken away, undermined, neutralized, because there are two witnesses. And that's the simple pshat, because the simple pshat, the pasuk says ain ela, there are no witnesses. Had there been witnesses, and witnesses means two witnesses, then there would be no possibility of an effective examination through the drinking of the Mei Merarim. That doesn't exclude the following, that if Beis Din hears the testimony of one witness that she had indeed this relationship, they will not have a drink for the Mei Merarim, because the Torah uses the word aid in the singular, aid ba, implying that if there's one witness, then she doesn't drink for the Mei Merarim. But Rav Sheshes in the Pshuto Shel Mikra, the plain meaning of the text, is deriving a different halacha. In a case where we have no witnesses, zero, nevertheless, the drinking was ineffective. Why? Because only up in Shemayim did they know at the time that she drank that there were witnesses. We'll find out a little bit later on. That's what the Gemara is going to clarify now, when the Gemara says that the Leka Diyadaba Lafuki ha te ha ika diyadaba. So the exception here to the efficacy of the bitter waters is the case where there are witnesses that saw her commit this crime.
But if the two witnesses never appear in the future,
right, then will
she's got away scot-free then?
Ah, I see what you're saying. Well, that's an excellent question, Jeremy. I don't know the answer to that question. Okay, we'll leave it.
Okay,
we'll leave it in the back burners. Hopefully, we'll find an answer to that question. Now, the Anerlan Aydin Mimasnisin, he enlightened our eyes for the Mishnah. So now we want to see what did Rav Sheshes see in our Mishnah, the Katani, because it states in our Mishnah amongst that whole list of cases where she will not have an effective drinking or examination from the drinking of the Mei Merarim, Shebola Eidim Sheitmea, because two witnesses testified that they saw her have this adulterous relationship. So the Gemara asks, the Asu Eidim Ema, when did these witnesses actually show up in Beis Din? Enem, if you'll tell me, Mekame Detishti, before she drank from the bitter waters, is then Zonahi, they have absolutely testified that she had this relationship, and for sure she's not allowed to eat from truma. And by the way, the fact that she's not allowed to eat from truma really has nothing to do with the parasha of Sota. It has to do with the fact that a woman who has a relationship, a violation of an erva, a very immoral relationship, where she's chayav misa in this case, then that prohibition, that violation, that criminal act will disqualify her from eating truma. She becomes what's called a zona. And amongst the various categories of people who cannot enjoy the benefits of kahuna, whether they're kohanim, or in this case she's married to a kohanim, there's someone called a zona. And a zona is someone who had violated, you know, a serious crime in the area of immorality, and she becomes a zona. And certainly these two witnesses can establish her guilt as a zona, and there's no need for the Mishnah to tell me that she can't eat from truma. For sure she can't eat from truma. She is a zona. By the way, there are other violations that would also make her into a zona. Let's say, for example, if she had a relationship with a non-Jew, or let's say she had a relationship with a close relative. But you have to know all the laws of a zona. When does a woman become posel a kahuna and therefore posel a truma? So by process of elimination, says the Gemara, Ella, it must be lebasar dishsai, which means that these two witnesses showed up later on after she already drank from the meimararim. And the Mishnah is coming to be mechadish to us that even though she survived, but this drinking did not examine her at all. Why? Because now that we see that there were eidim there, we know for sure that she was not examined by the Beis Din.
So did they make her drink again? Now the witnesses have appeared.
We don't need to drink. She'll be put to death. And certainly she won't be able to eat truma.
Yeah,
let's say we can't put her to death. There was no hasra, so there's a technical foul here, so we can't put her to death. But unless she would never ever be able to eat truma, that's for sure. And even though you would have said, wait a minute, you know, there's room for celebration over here because she survived the drinking of the Beis Mararim. We should allow her to resume her relationship with her husband. We should allow her to eat truma. The answer is no. Chas Shalom, heaven forbid, how can we do that? There are two witnesses now testifying that she committed this adultery. So certainly she cannot resume her relationship with her husband if we technically can't put her to death. And certainly she cannot eat from truma. But don't yell and scream, wait a minute, she drank from the Meimararim, we followed all the protocol, we didn't know of any witnesses, and she survived it. Doesn't that examination prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that she's guiltless? And the answer is that drinking from the Meimararim was worthless, because in fact there were two witnesses, we didn't know about them at the time, who witnessed her adultery. If you'll say, and this would be my first understanding of this Mishnah, is Ein Hamayim Bodkim Osa, that these waters are ineffective to examine her. And why is that? Because the Torah says that it's only in a case of Ein Eibo. But here there are two witnesses who can testify to the fact that she committed this crime, she committed this adultery. We're going to rely on these two witnesses. He said, in such a case, Ein Hamayim Bodkim. Because we believe these witnesses and she committed this crime, even though, again, we didn't have the witnesses in front of us at the time that she drank from the Beis Mararim, but now these witnesses are here, and according to Rav Sheshes, that proves that the drinking, the shsia from the Beis Mararim was totally ineffective. And the Beis Mararim does not have the power to test her, because there were two witnesses who saw her commit adultery. If you're going to tell me that since we were unaware of these witnesses, so we plead the fifth, meaning we're pleading innocent here, that we don't know that there are witnesses, so we gave her a drink for the Mayim Mararim, and the Mayim now are effective to determine, is Tigle Bilsa. This would be a revelation to the fact that Lamafreya, that retrospectively, Sadi the Shakri Ninu, that these Edom are perjuring themselves in a court of law, and they're lying through their teeth, because the Torah says that we rely on this test. We examined her, and lo and behold, she is guiltless. So in that case, we should throw out the Edom. Do you follow? So here's the deal. You know what really lies in the statement of Rav Sheshis? What would we have said without Rav Sheshis, and what does Rav Sheshis clarify for us? Without Rav Sheshis, we would have said, look, we didn't know that there were Edom around. We implemented the shtia, the drinking from the Meimararim. And now if these witnesses show up and testify that she committed adultery, we know for sure that they're lying through their teeth, because the Torah says we can rely on the test of the Bein Merarim, and she survived that test, so the examination was totally effective and reliable. We have to throw out these witnesses and determine that they are false witnesses. That's what we would have said without Rav Sheshis. But now that we have Rav Sheshis, the Mishnah is saying, no, we rely on the testimony of these two witnesses. They're contradicted by the Bein Merarim because she drank from the bitter waters and she survived. The answer is, the Bein Merarim were ineffective because, in fact, there were witnesses. We didn't know about those witnesses, but there were witnesses who saw the crime itself, the adultery itself.
Which is why we needed this interpretation by Rav Sheshis in that scenario.
Correct. That Rav Sheshis is coming to tell us that the Edom are reliable. Don't throw them out.
Yeah.
And don't question their honesty based on the fact that she survived this drinking, because in fact the drinking from the bitter waters was not effective at all. And why was it effective? Again, we couldn't have known that at the time. We thought, in all naivete, in the absence of any knowledge to the opposite, to the contrary, that the waters would be effective, and they were effective. That's what we thought in all our naivete. We had every reason to believe that she was guiltless, and she proved it by drinking and surviving the Meimararim. Now we have a whole new story in front of us. We have two witnesses. So you and I would have said, well, let's pit the two witnesses who testify that she had the adultery against the waters that testify that she did not have the adultery. Dang, that's not what we're going to do. What we're going to say is that now that we have the two witnesses, and we know for sure, based on the honesty and the credibility of these two witnesses, that she did in fact commit adultery. There were two witnesses at the time that she committed adultery. The drinking in the name of Rorim was not effective. So disqualify or discount the fact that she survived the name of Rorim. And rely on the two witnesses. And all this, says Rav Sheshis, is implicit in our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah says, K'shabo shnei edu ve'idu, that amongst the, well, what we decided was five cases where the Bein Merarim were ineffective, one of them was, Shabo edu shitveya, meaning that two witnesses testified that she in fact had this adultery relationship. And since there were two witnesses at the time of the adultery, therefore she is we'll just close the door. Therefore, we will actually disqualify, or what word should I use? We will determine the irrelevancy on a halachic level, irrelevancy of the fact that she drank from the Bein Merarim, because now we have the two witnesses. And that's what the Mishnah means when it says, Yeshla Edim She Nitma. Right? Shabo Edim She Tmer. Because again, what does the Gemara mean? If the Mishnah has in mind that these two witnesses came forth right up front, then she's a Zona. And the Mishnah doesn't tell us anything that we don't know about her enjoyment, meaning her being forbidden from eating truma. I mean, she's really an adulteress who has to be put to death. Ella, what? These Edom came later. And Rav Sheshis says, if they came later, what's the chiddush of our Mishnah? The Mishnah is telling us a gevaldige chiddush, namely, that even though we have now a situation where we should pit the weight of the evidence of the drinking of the Meimurarim against the evidence of the Tu'edim, and maybe we should tip the scale and favor the Meimurarim because that's a supernatural, metaphysical promise from the divine being, and therefore we should assume that the Eidim are lying.
Yeah.
Comes on Rav Sheshet and says, no, these Eidim are absolutely reliable, but the drinking of the Meimurarim is ineffective.
So what happens then when she drinks the water, and which we know is ineffective because there are two witnesses who turn up later on, so right. Presumably they then resume their marital relationship. She then eats the truma, and obviously, do they get punished for that? Because
You mean in the meantime we allowed her to eat truma to resume her relationship with her husband?
She compares that she was innocent.
Correct. No, you're 100% right. I mean that everything that we did was provisional, conditional. You know, now we find out, and everything is retrospective, right? The Gemara says, "La Freya." In retrospect, retroactively, we clarify that this whole thing was a big mistake. You know, we were relying on the witnesses, on the bitter waters and the examination thereof, and that was a waste of time. Again, we didn't know that at the time, but as it turns out, it was a waste of time. So we're not going to discredit the witnesses. On the contrary, we're going to accept the witnesses. We're going to discredit the bitter waters in this case. And how does Rav Sheshet see that in the Mishnah? From the fact that the Mishnah accepts these witnesses, right? The Mishnah says the bo edim shenitma, which means we accept the witnesses, and that really proves Rav Sheshet's assumption that the drinking from the Meimurarim in this case was ineffective. We didn't know it was ineffective. We only found out later on, but nevertheless, it was ineffective. And the testimony is now establishing that the waters were ineffective. Mm-hmm. Now, do you notice a Tosus here, Dibramasil Usha Bo'u? Do you see such a Tosus on your page? Ushabo?
Yes, I've got it. Yeah.
You got it? Yeah. So we're not going to go through the Tosus inside, but I do want to give you a sort of a highlight, if you will, a summary of what Tosus says. And he wants to consider, what about the testimony of one single witness? Let's say she drank from the Meimurarim. We didn't have any witnesses at all, so we followed protocol to the T, and now one witness shows up. And he, that one single witness, testifies that she had this adulterous relationship. Now, on the one hand, she survived the drinking of the bitter waters. That seems to, assuming that was effective, then that would prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that she was guiltless, that she was innocent. But on the other hand, we have this one witness, and we said before that the Torah relies on one witness, if you recall. Right? For example, had this one witness come, had he come to Beis Din before they gave her a drink for the Meimurarim, then given the fact that she already had Kini and Stira, we have enough circumstantial evidence that the Torah should rely on the testimony of one witness and establish beyond a shadow of a doubt that she had this adulterous relationship. And the Torah really, in this context, accepts the testimony of one witness. But on the other hand, she survived the drinking of the bitter waters, because we didn't have the witness at the time, so we gave her to the Meimurarim, and lo and behold, she's alive and well. So Tosus adds another element into the equation. And he says that we have the ability to come up with another possible answer as to why she survived drinking the bitter waters even though she was in fact guilty. Meaning we call it Shnei Ksuva Machish Zad Shiyoma Kosva Shlishi. We have two verses that contradict each other, but now we're going to add a third verse that's going to allow us to reconcile. On the one hand, we have the Eid Echad, and the Torah believes the one Eid that says that she had this relationship. On the other hand, we have the fact that she survived the drinking of the Meimurarim. And Rav Sheshet doesn't apply here, being his principle that the Mamre Rabbah is ineffective, that only applies when there were two witnesses. Here there was only one witness. So the Mamre Rabbah were effective, and they examined her, but yet we have one testimony, one aid who testifies that she was guilty. So how could she have survived the whole experience of drinking from the Mamre Rabbah? So Tosa says that there's a third possibility, and that really she's guilty, but she survived the Mamre Rabbah. How could that be so? So here Tosas quotes a Gemara later on that there are situations in which we can attribute her survival to something other than innocence. We'll call it X. There's some X that gives her a merit, I guess you'd call it, like a schus, a merit, that she would survive even though she's guilty. How is that possible? So for this, we would have to learn in Gemara later on, trying to remember if I can, where the Gemara is. I think it's on Daf Chaf Aleph. And the Gemara says, Bischus the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, she might actually survive the drinking of the Mamre Rabbah. She's going to die eventually. Could take 2-3 years down the line, but she will survive. Why? Because she has the schus of Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah protects a person, even when they're guilty and they should be punished. The Gemara says that's not really true, because you need what's called a mitzvah of the osa, someone who's obligated in Talmud Torah. A woman is not obligated in the study of Torah. Therefore, her Torah, although it's meaningful, would not have the power to protect her from the punishment that she should suffer. That's called an Eina Mitzvah V'Osa, someone who fulfills the law of the Torah on a voluntary basis. So the Gemara says that she can actually tap into a Talmud Torah that's Mitzvah V'Osa. She can split. There's like a partnership in which when she sends her husband off to study Torah, or her young boys to study Torah, she becomes a partner in their Talmud Torah. And therefore she gets the merit of a mitzvah v'osa, as if she were obligated. Now here we have a kash of all the Rishonim on this sugya. What happened here? We gave her a drink for the Mamre Rabbah and she survived, and now two witnesses show up, and they testify that she had this relationship, this adultery, she committed this adultery. So we say now that the reason why she survived is because the waters were ineffective. So we show them and ask, who says? Maybe the waters were effective, and Rav Sheshis is not correct. But the reason why she survived is because the waters were ineffective for a different reason, and that is because on the way to the Beis HaMikdash, he, the husband, had a relationship with her. And as we saw in that Mishnah, if he cohabitates with her on the way up to the Beis HaMikdash, then the Mamre Rabbah are no longer effective. So if we have proof positive that she did so, then she won't drink for the Mamre Rabbah, but we don't have any proof. But later on we find out that the waters were ineffective. And why? How do we know they're ineffective? Because there were two witnesses who saw her crime. So the Rishonim asked, maybe it's not pshat that because there are two witnesses, that's why the drinking of the waters was ineffective. But it was ineffective because maybe he cohabitated with her on the way to the Beis HaMikdash before she drank from the Mamre Rabbah. And we saw in that Mishnah that if he had this relationship with her on the way up to drinking, then the drinking is ineffective. So how can you prove that the reason why the waters are ineffective is because of the existence of two witnesses who saw the crime, the adultery? Maybe the reason why the waters are ineffective is because the husband had this relationship with her on the way up to the Beis HaMikdash. So it's not that the presence of two witnesses renders the waters ineffective. They really would be effective. They're ineffective for a different reason. That's because the husband had a relationship with her illegally on his way up to the Beis HaMikdash. So to answer this question, the Rishonim come up with the following solution. It's based on a Mishnah on Daf Zayin, which we didn't get to, that we never assume and suspect that the husband would have had a relationship with her on the way, because the Mishnah teaches us that two escorts are assigned to the husband, and that's going to prevent them from having this relationship. And that means that she is no longer alone with her husband from the moment of Kinyan Stira. We will guarantee that if the husband brings her up to the Mishkan, to the Beis HaMikdash, for drinking for the Mevararim, he will be accompanied by two, let's call them chaperones, and they will guarantee that he and she will not cohabitate. So therefore, we have every reason to believe that he was guiltless, the husband, that he did not have this cohabitation with his wife on the way up to the Beis HaMikdash. And if we have to ask ourselves, if that be the case, why weren't the Mayim, the Mevararim, effective? And the only answer we can give is Rav Sheshet's answer, that there were two witnesses at the time of the adultery. Now, he quotes here a note from the Tosis Rabbeinu Shantz, that the very fact that he's bringing his wife to Yerushalayim because he wants to test her through the bitter waters, that itself is a hochacha, is an absolute proof that demonstrates that he has not cohabitated with her illegally. In other words, he knows the law. He's aware of the fact that the cohabitation would render the waters ineffective. And he's bringing her up to the Beis HaMikdash. Why is he going through this entire process of bringing her to the Beis HaMikdash? Unless he wants her to drink from the Mevararim, as we saw in the Pasuk in Chumash in Parshas Nosa. So therefore, we have no reason to assume that he would cohabitate with her on the way up to the Beis HaMikdash. So in the absence of that violation, that avon on his part, we have to ask ourselves, so why weren't the waters effective? And Sheshes insists that the waters did not prove her innocence. She cannot resume her relationship with her husband. She cannot eat truma if she's married to a Kohen. And why is that so? And the answer has to be because there were two witnesses who saw the adultery. Again, we don't know about these two witnesses until they finally show up in court. And that leads us to Amale, which we'll pick up in Mitzvah another time. Amale Rav Yosef, Li Olam Emelecha Mayim Bod Kemosa. And then he's going to say that maybe there is some sort of other extraneous reason why she survived the Mevararim, even though the two witnesses say that she was guilty, but the Mayim themselves were effective, and they were bodek, they examined her, in fact. So that statement of Rav Yosef we'll have to study as a separate thing. Okay then?
Thank you, Rabbi.
All right, thank you so much. Okay. Okay.